Brown, almost hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Always fun stuff to talk about. Donald Trump and his new immigration vetting, extreme vetting that he's calling it. And the question that I'm asking is, should Native Americans originally have had something of this nature? Could have maybe changed some things. And what if we use this same vetting process for those who are now Native to this country? What happens then? Because the questions essentially are, the gist of it is, are you loyal to the U.S., what we believe? And apparently, are you bigoted or are you a hater? So if you fall into the bigotry or hatred category, you're out of here. So the question I'm asking, is this a self-exclusionary test for Donald Trump? We'll get into that. Also, I'm asking a question. Does Jesus ask us to find sheep or hunt wolves? We'll talk about that this afternoon. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour. Or the Trump bashing almost hour. Maybe that's what I should just change the name of the show to. I think there would be those who would be much happier with me just coming right out and saying it. Right? That's what you're going to expect. I asked this question over on my Facebook page. And now, first off, let me say this. When Clinton is written off, we know that. We know that. There's no question about that. And I always have to, as odd as it is, have to say this, that when I say the negative things I say about Trump, it's not because I'm supporting Clinton. I want Trump to be written off. That's what I want you to understand. We need to write both of these individuals off, not because we are not going to vote, but we're going to find a better choice. There are other choices. And again, it only depends on which side of the political fence you happen to be on, whether or not you think that third party vote is a vote for Trump or Clinton. You're going to think that. You're going to think that regardless. But it's not. It's a vote for that third party. That's what it is. So again, when I talk about the things I talk about, it's because I want you to see that he is not an option. He's really not. So the question I asked over on my Facebook page was that I went to his website, saw nothing about in any of the issues about being pro-life, nothing of this nature. And then, of course, I was immediately criticized with it being thrown back in my face. Well, I went to Sorora Foss's website and I see nothing about, well, apples to apples do not match here. Because one thing is, Foss talks about her lifelong Catholic ethos and the ministries that she started and the many things that are a part of her bio, which should lead one to believe that there's a track record of Catholic principles, Catholic ethic. You could certainly derive that from reading this. But the other thing is, she doesn't have an issues page. She doesn't. Granted, I wish she had a little bit more robust information, no doubt. But I've at least watched enough of her videos and spoken to her personally and communicated with her personally to trust that she has my vote. That's where I am, right? So what I want us to see is that Trump really is not an option. And the fear is, well, if I don't vote for Trump, then Hillary's going to get in there. I get that. And then if that is what you're doing, then just say that, please. Just say, I despise Donald Trump as much as the next guy, but you know what? I just don't want Hillary in there, so I've got to vote for this guy. Then make that your post. Don't praise his judicial nominations that he's magically chosen before his presidential election. Don't do that. Don't say that's why. Just come right out and say it. I cannot tolerate the remote idea of Hillary Clinton and the presidency. Therefore, I will, whatever it takes to keep her out of the office. If that's why you're voting for Trump and that's why you think it, then great. Then just say it. Don't try to justify. Because I really think that much of what he says is completely unjustifiable. It's certainly indefensible. Now, interestingly enough, in this conversation, we got into, of course, the judicial picks, which always comes down to that, right? Leo, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. Trump has to be the president because we're going to lose potentially 4 seats on the Supreme Court. We've got to have those filled by conservative nominees, which I remind every time, this comes up. Look at the record on the Supreme Court. Go back to what we call landmarks, which really aren't landmark decisions, but they're monumental in this changing the course of the way we justify that which is constitutional, such as Roe v. Wade and Obergefell, which I never seem to pronounce correctly, that ushered in gay marriage. When you look at these, there are conservative appointees on the majority ruling. There are. So you really can't use that argument. You just can't. And then there are those, well, that was it. You know, no, you just can't use that argument. That is not an argument. If that is your only basis, it is not an argument. Please understand. So anyway, we got into this discussion about how pro-abort Hillary Clinton is. I agree. Again, off the table. Not even a consideration. That's not what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to put her in a positive light because of the questions I ask about Donald Trump. That's not what we're doing. But then the conversation turned to abortion, and I said, look, it's the culture dictates the decisions on the Supreme Court anyway, as well as legislation. This is what happens. There's enough of a groundswell of support. It's a sweeping cultural change. This is what happened in the 60s that led to the early 70s decision of the Supreme Court on Roe v. Wade. That's what happened. There was enough of that. Whatever you want to call it, liberation, freedom, sexual revolution, you name it, it led to this decision on the Supreme Court, just as the recent Obergefell decision was a sea change in the culture. This is what happens. So what I propose is let the president be whomever it may be. Let the Supreme Court be whomever they may be. And let us, as cultural agents, as cultural change agents, let's find a way of changing the dialogue. Let's find a way of altering the landscape enough in a positive direction that can potentially make a huge change. Because here's what is true, and I know this having been, not that I was necessarily a pro-choicer, but I was pretty darn libertarian at one time. I was very much personal freedom, personal choices, consenting adults do what consenting adults do. You face the consequences and perhaps solve the consequences, whatever. And if that means making the choice of an abortion, that's your choice. It's your business, nobody else's. Don't worry about it. then I would see these quote unquote pro-lifers doing some of the most ridiculous things that I ever thought, and realize that I was in this mindset as a young 20-something in the early 90s when there was a lot of upheaval and a lot of crazy things that were happening, even to the point of bombings at abortuaries and things of this nature. And it all just looks so ridiculous. Well, still, that kind of stuff still looks ridiculous, of course. But just the whole pro-life movement made no sense to me. As an outsider, I always thought that is not an effective message to send. Whatever you're doing in this intense opposition is not working out. That doesn't make sense. And little did I know that in the midst of all of that, there was a gentleman named, who was still out there with his work, Dr. David C. Reardon. You've heard me talk about this book before. I promote it as often as I can. I was in a group of 40-some-odd pro-lifers a year or so ago, and two of us, maybe three, maybe me and two others out of that group, had any familiarity with the book. And his book is called Making Abortion Rare, and he proposes very reasonable measures. Very reasonable. And this was written in the mid-90s, and he talks about how we can turn the tide if we adopt a different attitude. So in my posts here, I echoed some and added a little bit of my own of Dr. Reardon. I said, until we are seen in the pro-life community as having an intense concern for mother and father in this crisis situation, until we're seen as having outstretched arms and open opportunity to assist in any way possible those in these challenges, we're not going to be effective. As long as we're seen as condemning, judgmental, oppositional, we are going to have a reaction to that. But if we truly adopt this attitude of we are here to help in whatever way we can, however we can, whatever that looks like, what is it that you need help with? When we stand, you know, stand at the abortuary and don't say abortion is murder on your sign. Have a sign that says, how can I help you? What can I do for you? There are solutions. Anything other than what appears to be a condemning message. Even, and as crazy as this sounds, even there in prayer can look like a condemnation. And I know that that sounds crazy, but I've been on the other side. I know what it looks like. I know what all of that looks like. And until we're willing to change our tactics and expand our hearts a little bit to say, yes, it is the unborn, no doubt, but it's not just the unborn. There are at least three, in some cases more, depending on the pregnancy, but there are at least three individuals in this equation we've got to care equally about. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our friend of the show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Call culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So apparently Mark Shea is looking for a little bit of inspiration, and he's thinking that he needs to turn to the bottle, I guess, which has been a popular choice for many a creative type, as we know, over the many years of creative types. And so I said, and he says he's no fan of booze, and I asked the question, I'm like, have you tried bourbon? Because how could you not be? That's what I think. I literally drink bourbon because I do like the taste. Absolutely. And someone says, kerosene in a oak barrel, something of that nature. And I said, this could be justifiable hate speech in Kentucky. Saying something of that nature could be deemed quite unconstitutional, I think. So watch what you say about bourbon. Donald Trump, say what you want. Interesting, I saw this little video Nike thing, and I thought, wow, that's really cool. And this 86-year-old nun who is doing Ironman competitions, she's done 45 of these. She started in her 50s and has just not stopped. Impressive and inspiring. Well, not to all, because apparently if you dig into what this nun is all about, she's got some sort of feminist movement, and she's pushing for things that seem to be antithetical, and she's kind of stepped into this independent status, and she doesn't wear a habit, even though she's seen in a habit in this video and all of this. And who the heck cares, right? Who cares? I mean, really, this woman is, look at the inspiration that she is. Nike was not saying, oh, and she's pushing for women priests. Nothing of that nature. You know what they're saying? She's 86. She's 86 years old. She's done 45 Ironman competitions. Is that not impressive? Should we not look at this and go, wow, I couldn't do an Ironman now, right now, regardless of what your age is, right? 86 years old, and she could kick any of our butts. Is that not impressive in and of itself? It should be. And is that not inspiring in and of itself? It darn well should be. But no, what do we got to do? We always got to go and it's the same, you know, it's the Kazir Khan thing. Well, look at this guy. He's got this whole business going on for immigrants, and who knows what the heck he's been. You know, why do we always have to dig into the backstory? Or even worse was in the recent police shooting, which was a justified shooting, no doubt. They were potentially facing fire from a loaded weapon. And then, of course, it comes out, well, this guy's got this rap sheet and this and that. Well, who cares? Even though it was justified in defense, we don't go in and say, or Trayvon Martin, which I was talking about recently with someone, and it look at what this guy was all. I mean, it's, why do we do that? Why do we do that? And especially in this case, why do we do that? This woman has amazing merit for what she's promoted for through Nike. Yeah, they happen to mention she's a nun, absolutely. But that's the briefest of prefaces to what it's about as her, as an 86-year-old out there doing what she's doing. And I think, unfortunately, we have developed this attitude that we are supposed to be on the wolf hunt, right? There's something about being a Christian, I guess, that now you have the opportunity or the insight or expertise, or somehow you've been granted the grace to hunt wolves. And that's what you're supposed to do. And when you find those wolves in sheep clothing, how dare they? Well, we got to call them out in every way imaginable. I don't know where that passage is in Scripture. And if it's there, educate me. I don't know where it says, leave the sheep where the heck they are and go hunt all the wolves you possibly can. Is that there? Where is that? Find all of those with whom you disagree, who you can undoubtedly make an example of because they're not as Catholic as you, and call them the heck out. Yeah, where is that? Is that in Scripture somewhere? It certainly seems to be that we're supposed to find the lost sheep. We are called to do what Jesus does and serve those who are lost, serve those who are in need. And by doing that, maybe we can have a positive impact on them, which is interesting because in this LifeSite news piece, they even say, well, she does this and this and this, and she's all into the social justice stuff. Well, you know what? That's what Matthew 25 is all about, too. That is what Matthew 25 is about. And it's how we'll be judged in the final judgment. So maybe that's not such a bad thing. But yet we find this justification of saying, well, if someone has remotely left the reservation, whatever that reservation happens to be in our minds, they're free and open game for any degree of criticism, regardless of the good work they do. And it's unfortunate because I think it hurts our witness. Now, there are those who say, well, she hurts our witness because look at what she's doing. Well, you calling attention to the fact that this is a challenge and presenting it as a challenge to someone, and again, I can sit here with all confidence knowing this is how it's seen because I've been on the outside looking in. It looks like you guys are all crazy. You're all crazy because you don't even agree within your own denomination, as we would say. Whatever that, your own religion, you can't even get it together. So why would I have any trust of what you've got to offer? Unless you can give me something better than that, unless you can show me something that looks like I could actually trust, then well, why should I care? So again, instead of hunting wolves all the time, if we began to really feed sheep, find the sheep and feed them, which, you know, it's not hard to find them. Let's be honest. You don't have to look too far to find the lost sheep. The lost sheep that's hungry and in need of feeding, if we were to feed them and concentrate all of our efforts on feeding them, we wouldn't have to worry about the sheep. I wouldn't have to worry about the wolves, rather. Focus on the sheep. Don't worry about the way. It's the weed in the weeds, right? We don't pull the weeds up because we're going to pull the weed out inadvertently. It's the same thing. And that's clear. That's clear in Scripture. As we try to be these de-weeders out there pulling up everything that doesn't look like wheat, we will pull up wheat. It's going to happen. Because all it's going to take is somebody seeing this type of criticism and going, I'm done. And I've seen it. Maybe not that particular type of criticism, but I've seen that I'm done attitude. I just saw it recently with a friend of mine who finally had taken all he could of this particular situation. I don't want to get into it, but he's done. Done. I'm done. Can't take this anymore. And that happens. And unless we're willing to be those sheep feeders, and unless we're really, really willing to not just hunt wolves, it's going to come down to that. And unfortunately, you never know. I mean, you never know how someone's going to take something that you present, and it's going to look like a wolf hunt, but when it's something of this nature, and it's undeniably that here's a woman that maybe, I don't know, someone could have seen that without any investigation, without any research, because not everybody does that. Few do. Few do, I found. You know, I thought everybody did. As soon as you see something, you dig into an internet search on everything, and you find out everything you can. I did. I looked up Sister Buter immediately. Who is this person? Wow, this is cool. What's she all about? But not everybody does that. Most would simply look at this and go, wow, that's inspiring. Maybe I need to get off my butt. Not maybe I need to go be Catholic. That's probably not even what they're thinking. If an 86-year-old woman can compete in an Ironman, I probably could maybe walk to the mailbox today Maybe that would be something I could do. Who knows? Whatever it is. They might be inspired to do something they're not doing that may be beneficial to them because they've been inspired. So I would hope, especially in these situations, that we would maybe stop, think about this a little bit more, and ask, what is this witness really? Could I be inhibiting something here that could be an opportunity for grace to be working because this door was opened? Or am I so intent on discrediting anything that doesn't fit my mold of whatever it happens to look like? I've now diminished the witness. So sheep feeding versus wolf hunting. I think that we all kind of have to ask ourselves, boil this down, and look at it a little more closely. More to come in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost an Hour. Back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook. Conversations get interesting over there. And sometimes quite lengthy as well. And then Mark Shea pulled me into one of his conversations yesterday, which that opened up all kinds of interesting dynamics. Now I know what Mark deals with. Thank you, Mark, for putting me into that fray. That was fun. So it appears as though there's a number, and I'm not sure percentage-wise exactly what this concentration is, but a serious number of refugees, Muslim refugees, who have converted to Christianity. There are those even in their home countries who are converting to the Catholic faith. And the concern now, and this was from a Alatea blog post about this, the concern of their safety, because naturally people find this fascinating and celebratory. They want to take photos, they want to post these photos, put it out there. And this is now dangerous. It's dangerous for those who have done this to be featured this way. So I think that generally we want to applaud and celebrate and show, look what's happening, but at the same time, I don't think we think about the dynamics of what it could really be. And I know I've shared this a number of times, but every time I hear something of this nature, I'm immediately reminded of sitting with that group of Syrians. And it's as fresh in my memory as yesterday, even though this was, 2005, I guess, when we were there in Germany for a World Youth Day. And these pilgrims saying, we had to lie to the government about where we were going. I don't even know where we are. And if it was discovered, the priest who was with them said, if it was discovered that I had 20 kids with me and we were here at this Catholic celebration, it could be some pretty bad news. But we're here. And I remember beautiful inside and out people. I mean, they were just amazingly wonderful, just like our kids. I mean, they were there with our teenagers interacting, and they were amazingly good English speakers, and it was like another group of kids. And that just pained me when I heard him say that, and then to see what has happened in Syria since then. I just, they're always in my mind. And I always wonder what happened to those kids, that priest, what became of them? And then when I hear things of this nature, it's unfortunate that is a reality, that something of that nature can happen. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we stop what we're doing or that we cease to evangelize, because there's obviously something there. And it's more than just I'm not saying it's more than the conversions to Islam, because I don't know what those are, but it's more than just a negligible amount of individuals who are coming to this realization and making that very challenging decision to step outside of their faith of origin as a Muslim and into the Catholic faith. And we hear these stories and we see this, and we need to somehow protect that information, as the group from Syria needed for no one to know where they were. It's very much the same dynamic. So interesting and very unfortunate, but reality, right? So definitely pray for those who are finding themselves facing this opportunity and may be willing to make the decision. So I mentioned this earlier, circling back around, coming full circle on the Trump question. And now we know that Donald Trump is proposing, speaking of refugees and immigrants, a very strict vetting process that essentially would say, if you're not 100% rah-rah, go America, you can't come in. If you are here because you want to do nothing but celebrate our American way, then perhaps you can come in. If you come here with any inkling of upholding your traditional way of life before coming to America, there could be some suspicion there. And of course, Trump is saying, especially in the sense of Sharia law, which there are degrees of Sharia law, and I think we've talked about this before. Regardless of how you look at it, it's very similar to what we understand as canon law. We have a law that governs the Catholic Church, and we abide by that in certain ways, especially, and the most common of these is when it comes to things like marriage and annulment. There's a canonical understanding, a law that regulates and governs these events of marriage and annulment, and we use that. It's extra to our current laws, whatever they may be, federal, state, local, and it's part of our church. It's what we use. So if our guideline is no Sharia law, which doesn't necessarily mean a full-scale, this is how we operate our government law, which is true the case, it's undoubtedly the case in some Muslim countries, but not all. And there are some countries that have portions of Sharia law, and then there are those that have retained some degree of cultural practice within their communities, certainly within their mosque communities and the way they celebrate. That's kind of beginning to step on and into religious liberty issues. And I think I've said this many times before, we need to be concerned about religious liberty. We need to, because as soon as we start eroding that, now we've got real issues. And if we inadvertently set up something that would say pluralism is no longer allowed in this country, which was never the intention of our founding fathers. That's why they were careful in crafting the initial documents that made it very clear that there's opportunity for pluralism in expressing what we believe. And then, of course, the famous separation of church and state letter of Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptists, all of this that really has put a protection in there, which we should applaud. Because as people of faith, we want that. We don't want a theocracy. We don't. nor do we want any limits on the way we practice our faith or express our faith. And I remember 8 years ago, the fear was, as soon as Obama gets in the White House, we're done. We won't even be able to have public images of anything. We can't even utter anything faith-oriented because it's going to be restricted to this freedom of worship and behind the four walls of a church, and that's it. That never even was proposed, that I recall, throughout this administration, but we were so fearful of that. But yet those same ones that were so fearful of something of that nature happening now seeming to be riding the Trump train gleefully, which is now proposing restrictions on religious liberty. You may not see it that way, but that is what this translates to. If part of your litmus test of even allowing someone in the country has to do with their religion, we are now infringing upon a very important element to our Constitution that allows all of us a liberty that could erode should we go down this path. And I think we got to be very careful with what we think looks good because, oh, finally, somebody's saying what needs to be said, right? That's the thing. Oh, finally, somebody proposing something that makes sense because, yeah, we need to do that. And it's a very limited understanding and a very restrictive policy that could then be implemented on who knows what level. So I think we got to really be careful with those unforeseen circumstances of something that we think might be good for the moment, but ultimately could translate into precedent, right? Because that's what happens. It's the old camel's nose in the tent analogy, right? That once you're in, now you're done, right? It's all done. It's all undone, whatever it may be, to the point that now we've messed it up. Now we've really messed it up. So I don't know. It's a very bizarre dynamic that I see happening now with some of those same fears that were there 8 years ago really seems to be presenting itself as a possible manifestation, and there's no concern. None. Now, I would ask, what would you do if it was turned around? And now instead of Sharia, we put canon in there. Anyone expressing any kind of canon law adherence, we need to scrutinize. We need to vet. Does that change your attitude at all? Does that make you think, we could replace that. And that could be the next step. Not to be an alarmist, but my goodness, man, we got to really think about things a little bit differently. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much, Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless you.